Hello and welcome to Real Time Strategy, a gaming podcast from PR Pros. I'm Sam Mosher, joined by my co-host Caitlin Redwing, and today we're digging into the biggest news of the week, including Embracer Group's big restructuring, Star Wars Outlaws season pass drama, and Fallout's TV renewal. Fun follow-up on last week's episode. But first, before we get into all of that, Caitlin, how are you doing this week?
I'm doing well. Today is Tuesday that we're recording. Thankfully, we aren't recording yesterday because I went to Coachella this past weekend. And yesterday, I felt like a zombie and was dead and had Coachella cough. But today, I'm feeling good. I don't want to say like I'm happy to be back at work. I wish I was still at a music festival. But like... I'm feeling good. It was a great weekend. It was very hot, but honestly, like, weather was really nice. All the acts were a lot of fun. I don't know. I'm a changed woman. It was my first Coachella, and I get the hype, and I want to go every year now.
So this was your first Coachella, right?
Yes.
And so a few quick questions before we get into the meat of the show. One, who was your favorite performer from the weekend?
Oh, God, I don't have a favorite. I'll list a couple favorites. Okay, Chapel Roan.
Yes.
She's God. That was the first act I saw, and I was like, I really can't get better than this. And it almost didn't. I cried during Lana, of course. Mm. No Doubt was like a milestone act. Like, I'm so glad to see it. Like, Gwen Stefani also just has such an incredible stage presence. And No Doubt hasn't toured in 9 years, I believe, is what she said. So, like, just really cool to see her. Le Sserafim, seeing them live made me a fan because I'd, like, heard about them and they were at BlizzCon, but I wasn't able to see them perform when I was at BlizzCon. So seeing them was really cool. And then Jhené Aiko brought out Big Sean, and I love that because I got to see Big Sean live a couple years ago, and he brought Jhené out, I think, while she was pregnant with their like latest kid. And so, I don't know. It's just like,
so
they're
sweet.
My favorite, like, adorable performing couple. And yeah.
So, is Jhené from Detroit? Is that the connection between those two?
I think Big Sean is.
I know Big Sean is. I didn't know if they have like shared Detroit love.
I don't know if she does, because I know he brought out his like entire family when I saw him in Detroit. Let's see. She's from Los Angeles.
Huh. Well, that's a cool connection nonetheless, especially since the last time you saw him or brought her, they collaborated then. Last Coachella question, or second to last Coachella question. Is there something, because it was your first time, music festivals overwhelm me. So I'm always looking for advice. Should I do one myself? Like, what do you wish you had known going in that you know now?
I probably would have brought like one of those like water backpack type things so that you always have water. I was lucky in that I wasn't GA. I had artist guest passes. So I had like a back area and there was lots of water. So we were able to like get water pretty often, but like walking around outside, there's like a couple water refill stations, but they're very spread out. Like, stages are quite far from one another and it was very hot. And I felt like anytime I grabbed a water, I was like chugging it and drinking the whole thing. And I was like, I could use so much more water. So, but I saw like a lot of people had like really cute ones too. Probably something you could just get on Amazon, but definitely like bring something that you can wear to carry water in. I don't know. I guess like wear comfortable shoes, like really comfortable shoes.
Yeah.
And switch those shoes every day because that switches the pressure points on your feet and like why you don't get like how you don't get like blisters and stuff. So don't wear the same shoe every day.
That is really good advice. That's just good advice for events in general.
I was like, I don't know if that is like something to know, if people know that, but you should know that.
I have not
like,
heard that before.
Even
that
if
makes
you're
a
like,
lot of
these
sense.
Are my best like walking shoes and are really comfortable. Great. Wear that day one. You have to wear something else day two. And you could wear that first pair like day three. That should be enough time. So that's what I did. And this was like the first time that I had a show where I was like, I didn't feel like I was dying, and I had no blisters at the end of 3 days.
Okay. That's a huge win when it comes to Coachella, I'm sure.
Yes. Another thing is like, oh, I don't know. If you're going to camp, like probably camping with a bunch of friends is probably a lot of fun. But really, I don't know, start saving up for like, if you want to get like a house with people. I think there's, you could go to like Joshua Tree, which is like an hour away or something like that. A little bit cheaper. And then you get to like spend your mornings like in the pool, because a lot of acts don't start till like 3 p.m. Or like 5 p.m. for some of the bigger ones. Like Renee Rapp was 5 p.m. on Sunday, and I think we didn't even go until then. So yeah, those are, I think that's my advice. Also just like plan out who you want to see. Look at the map, know where the stages are. They're not close to each other. It is not easy to get between a lot of them.
Well, that's, I hope to go to a big music festival, whether it's Coachella or Lollapalooza or something at some point. So I am definitely noting all of that, especially the shoes one.
Yeah.
Never heard that before. And that makes so much sense.
Go on. Go ahead. You ask your last question.
Was there any gaming related things at Coachella? Since this is a gaming podcast, I know Billie Eilish just announced her Fortnite festival collab, but I think she was at Coachella with Lana the weekend before.
Wait, how did I miss this?
Did you miss this? This happened today.
Yes. I have totally missed this. I haven't seen any news from today yet.
You can now get a Billie Eilish costume in Fortnite. I almost added that to the outline for this week, but I figured it would just be us fangirling.
Oh, I'm totally fangirling. This is better than the Lady Gaga one. Sorry, Lady Gaga. I love you too. But like this one has me more excited. Very cool. I love to see that. I don't think there was any gaming stuff. I'm trying to think, like I saw there was like a Pinterest thing going on. A Coke area. Like Coca-Cola. I don't know. That there wasn't, I honestly didn't go into any like activation stuff. I was solely there for just music, and I didn't see anything. I was like, there's a YouTube creators room in the artist guest area, but like really, it was just like showing streams of the shows, and you could like film there and stuff if you wanted to make content. But yeah, no gaming stuff. That's a very good question. And I wonder if they've looked into that.
I remember last year, partly because we worked on the campaign, there were Diablo 4 cosplayers at Coachella last year that were posting images from the weekend. But yeah, I feel like we're still, you know, games are coming to movie festivals, film festivals, South by Southwest. I know there's stuff at Tribeca. I feel like we're still a ways away from like gaming having any sort of major presence at music festivals, outside of maybe some Fortnite festival.
Yeah, that's what I was just going to say. I was like, you know what? But you brought up Fortnite, and I could totally see there being like one of the Coachella performances also streaming live in Fortnite. I'm actually surprised they haven't done that yet.
I was going to suggest the same thing. Same thing as like when they did the Tenet trailer drop in Fortnite. Like you can see if Billie had a Coachella set, that would have been awesome for them to air that in game. And then it transitioned into like the splash ad announcing her as the headlining artist for Fortnite Festival Season 3.
Oh, wow. What a missed opportunity.
Oh, well, unfortunately, no gaming major news coming out of Coachella this year, believe it or not. But we do have plenty of gaming news to discuss in other areas on this week's episode. So let's go to our first story this week, which comes from James Batchelor at gamesindustry.biz, who writes, Embracer Group splits into three. Embracer Group has announced it split into three separate companies. The three entities created will be independently publicly listed on NASDAQ Stockholm. These companies are currently being referred to as Asmodee Group, Coffee Stain and Friends, and Middle Earth Enterprises and Friends, although the latter two will be given a new name at a later date. While Asmodee and Coffee Stain will become new listings on NASDAQ Stockholm, Middle Earth will remain within the Embracer Group as it is currently listed. This listing may also be renamed. Asmodee will split off within the next 12 months, while Coffee Stain will separate during calendar year 2025. Shares in these two will be distributed to the shareholders of Embracer Group. The company claimed that separating into three entities will enable each to focus on its, quote, core strategies, end quote, and grow in their own ways. The 9,003 fully owned or controlled IP across Embracer will be moved into the relevant new entities. Embracer Group will focus on tabletop games, while Coffee Stain's titles will range from indie to AA games for PC, console, and mobile. Just for a little bit of extra context around what these three groups are going to be like, I'm now going to go to Jess Weatherbed and Embracer Group, who fleshes out a bit more about what's going to be under the umbrellas for each of these three new entities. So starting with Middle Earth Enterprises and Friends, again, will likely be renamed. This company will be renamed from Embracer Group. It's described as, quote, a creative powerhouse in AAA game development and publishing, and that, end quote, that will retain ownership of Dead Island, Killing Floor, Kingdom Come Deliverance, Tomb Raider, and the Lord of the Rings IPs. So think of this as like the AAA house of Embracer. Now going to the AA and below house, that again is Coffee Stain and Friends, described as a, quote, diverse gaming entity that will focus on indie, mid-market, and free-to-play games. Properties under this umbrella include Deep Rock Galactic, Goat Simulator, Satisfactory, Wreckfest, Teardown, and Valheim. And for those of you who are not familiar with Asmodee Group, which we used to work with at Triple Point, I'm very fond of many of their games outside of having worked with them. I have my copies of Catan and Ticket to Ride under the table behind me. But yes, their catalog includes things like Ticket to Ride, Seven Wonders, Azul, Catan, Dabble, and Exploding Kittens. They also make several licensed games, including The Lord of the Rings, Marvel, Game of Thrones, and Star Wars. This all comes after... returning to GamesIndustry.biz, the end of a 9-month restructuring program, which saw Embracer close three studios, Volition Games, Free Radical Design, and Campfire Cabal, sell off Saber Interactive in February of this year, and Gearbox to 2K in March, just a couple weeks ago, as well as lay off more than 1,400 members of staff. Caitlin, Embracer Group has been a kind of a question mark in the gaming industry ever since it started acquiring all these companies. And this, to my understanding, marks kind of the end of this chapter of Embracer's big pivot post its losing its Savvy Game Group investment deal that was hopefully going to keep all of these things afloat under the same umbrella. That fell through. The said restructuring happens, studios get shut down, sold off, people get laid off, and now we have three separate companies. What's your reaction to all this? Does this make sense as a next step for Embracer as a, you know, former conglomerate, now three-pronged entity?
I don't think it's fair to say former conglomerate. It's still a conglomerate. Like between their three companies, it's the same. It's still Embracer. They still manage over 9,000 franchises, which that is, what was it? They put it in the press release. It was like 9,003. They didn't say over 9,000. 9,003. Let's be very clear here. They don't want people to think it's almost 10,000 because that's insane.
That's too many.
Too many, but 9,003 is not. I think this is totally just to give them it's a PR move. I think they're trying to save their reputation I don't know if they can save their reputation at this point, but trying, if they rename these studios, that eventually people will forget that they're owned and like managed by Embracer, because separating these it's not going to change anything. Embracer for years, I can't remember what year it was, like 2021 or so, when their venture capital firm started acquiring all of these companies, thinking they were going to have this major investment from the Saudi government. And then that plan fell through and they put like tons of jobs on the line just for stakeholders' sake. And that fell through and people have lost their jobs and they've canceled games and they've closed studios. And the Embracer name has just been dragged through the mud. So what are they going to do other than like, let's just like chop up everything that we own right now and put it into three companies, give them silly little names, add friends, like, oh, we're friendly, like just a couple guys just running studios, nothing shady to see here. Just your local
hobbits and friends, yeah.
Yeah, just your local hobbits and friends making silly little games. It's fine. I don't know. To me, it's just like, it's just a PR move. They're just trying to save their reputation and benefit their shareholders. I didn't really see anything in that press release that made me go, oh, you know what? They're changing their ways. This is going to be for the benefit of all of these people's jobs, because so far I don't see that.
Yeah, I'm hopeful for what this means. Like, I side with you that the business strategy of Embracer up to this point has been confusing at best, and this definitely signals at least move away from the brand, which is tarnished. And like Embracer, the name itself has become a bit of a meme. Like, you know, Greg Miller's joke about the company went viral following the DICE Awards this year about just the name Embracer Group scaring people in the audience. And, you know, a lot of the headlines following the news this week was, you know, Embracer de-embraces. Even the name itself kind of fed into this idea of like a Voltron-like thing, building a bunch of things on top of each other. Ultimately, I think splintering off these different companies to work under their own management is for the best for their own interests. Like, Asmodee has traded hands with a lot of different corporate owners over the last couple of years, and seeing it while still report to the owner, Lars Wingsfor, who is the CEO of Embracer Group and will oversee these three divisions, them not being... removing one less layer of all of this from them, I think, is for the best, especially because Asmodee is the biggest of the Embracer companies. It's also the one that brings in the most revenue. Tabletop is a, you know, kind of an overlooked space, as we talked about with the Rascal folks a couple weeks ago. And so letting them focus on board games, you know, that is way drastically different than video game publishing, and video game publishing for AAA games under like the, you know, the people making the next Tomb Raider game are going to have wildly different market expectations and objectives than the people making Goat Simulator 4. that was always kind of the question about Embracer Group in general. It's just like all of these, like, does it even make sense for all of these wildly different products and audiences to come together? I'm sure the pitch originally was, let's try it. Like, why not have all of this under the same window and again make something out of these 9003 IP? But that's just, you know, ultimately like bit off way more than they could chew, and this is them portioning out the plates in a different way.
Yeah, and you make good points, like them being able to manage their own finances and go to market plans. And like, hopefully that leads to less cancellations of games and more games get out there and less people lose their jobs. I think it's just kind of one of those scenarios where we have to wait and see. And like, is what they're saying actually going to happen? Or is the Lars guy, like, is Embracer, the board of directors, like, are they still going to be pretty heavy handed in the future of all of these companies? And right now it's just slapping on a new title and name of the company.
Yeah.
Bad names, by the way. Did they say that they were going to change, or was that you just theorizing after the backlash of Coffee Stain and Friends?
Okay, it is confirmed the both Coffee Stain and Friends and Middle Earth Enterprises and Friends will be given a new name at a later date. What that name is, okay, I'm not sure. But yeah, it certainly doesn't make sense for Middle Earth Enterprises to be publishing, you know, Tomb Raider 4.
Dead Island. Yeah. Games that have no place in Middle Earth. Or like, who thought, you know what, after our terrible reputation, let's give this placeholder name Coffee Stain.
Coffee Stain. A cute name Hello? For an indie label, but not a great name for something that, as we remarked earlier, the name itself has become a bit of a stain.
Yeah, the coffee stain you left on the games industry? Crazy. How did not a single person in that room go, you know what? This probably isn't the best name to give this.
I also wonder if this marks... Now, of course, these subdivisions within these larger umbrellas will... perhaps still operate, like there'll be still be plenty of studios under Aspidae, you know, Days of Wonder making Ticket to Ride, but like will all of the different publishing labels underneath Coffee Stain and Friends still exist? Like is this all I'm building to is like, is this finally the end of the THQ brand? I don't say that with any sort of like sentiment for good and bad. I have a lot of love for like THQ. I played a lot of their licensed games growing up, and it's just kind of been weird to even though that company went bankrupt in the like mid 2010s to then become resurrected in this weird way as THQ Nordic, and now that is underneath the Coffee Stain and Friends label. So like,
yeah,
will that ultimately be renamed THQ and Friends? I don't know. I'm curious if that label still has any value at this point.
I would take so many more Destroy All Humans games. And like, I know that gamers and the wrestling fandom have a huge overlap, and I don't personally watch wrestling, but like, anytime there's like WWE SmackDown or something, my timeline of, especially in the gamer side, like it just becomes a recap. It's like when a Taylor Swift album comes out is equivalent to like the WWE SmackDown in gamers world. And I believe THQ still owns like the rights to the WWE games.
They sold that to 2K. Did they sell it? But I mean, there's still a space.
I think I get those two confused all the time.
Given how popular, you know, WrestleMania 40 went over super well. I do think there's a space for another major publisher to try to compete, whether it's with an AEW game. I'm talking a little AEW. Bit. Yeah, like that is probably the extent of my wrestling knowledge just now. But I would like to see somebody else enter that space. And maybe there's still some sort of DNA there, however happy with some of those old THQ studios that can make that happen. But
yeah,
what, you know, talking, I played a bit of, you know, what I think is good about this restructuring. The one thing, you know, not necessarily the drawback, but the challenge that this poses for these three different entities now is to make not just a name for all of themselves. Some of them still need a name itself, but getting spokespeople out for each entity to make clear what their objectives are. Because for so long, I feel like Lars has been the only person kind of speaking on behalf of Embracer Group. The exception to that, I would say, was Matthew Karch, who was the head of Saber. But of course, now Saber has gone independent. They branched off and are now their own company separate from Embracer. So I would love to see more communication from Asmodee, from whoever leads Coffee Stain, and whoever leads the AAA initiative about what they see as their ultimate direction for each of their different types of products, because now that they are separate, they can't rely on like the success of one of them to lift, you know, the quarterly earnings. Like that was probably the sell on Embracer Group, is like if Saints Row or had been a huge hit, or if Tomb Raider will be a huge hit, that won't help Asmodee, that won't help Coffee Stain, at least not from each company's like quarterly earnings point. Sure, it'll help the overall umbrella, you know, overseen by Lars, but that also again changes the objectives. Like Coffee Stain probably won't have to make as much money as a you know, a AAA publisher will, but still they are no longer all feeding the same beast. So that is one thing that we'll have to follow coming off of this. Well, any other Embracer thoughts before we move on to our next story?
I don't think so. I think that's all I got in me for today.
Well, let's embrace some Star Wars news. Star Wars Outlaws got a story trailer a couple weeks ago, and there's been some drama coming off of that. So Star Wars Outlaws is the open world Star Wars game made by oh, the team that made The Division and Avatar Frontiers of Pandora. And it is coming out August. Oh, I opened the wrong story. It is coming out August 30th, I believe. August 27th.
Yes.
Oh. And so said story trailer.
Mine says August 30th.
Oh, see, here's, we're already getting into the drama around this. Uh-huh. Is I might be reading the early access release date. So yeah, it is releasing August 30th. The developer of it is Massive Entertainment. However, as we'll get to with this drama involves, if you buy the several different versions of this game, whether it's the $110 gold edition or the $130 ultimate edition, you can get 3 days of early access. Hence the confusion around the when this game is launching from Caitlin and I. We can get to that whole topic in a bit. However, the drama we're going to start with this week is that Ubisoft came under fire after details from the Gold Edition and Ultimate Edition were unveiled following the story trailer, revealing that the game's Jabba the Hutt mission was locked behind the game's Season Pass. The Season Pass explainer reads, "Play the exclusive Jabba's Gambit mission at launch. Just as Kay is putting together a crew for the Canto Bight heist, she receives a job from Jabba the Hutt. Turns out the ND5 owes Jabba a debt from years ago, and he has come to collect." So there was a lot of people frustrated, A, just about it's already a $70 game, and offering $110 or $130 additions at launch already feels like a lot to ask for. On top of that, if we're already paying $70 for this game, it feels bad, man, to not have one of, you know, the most beloved or at least iconic Star Wars characters, something used in the story trailer to announce all this, to have content around him gated off. So there was confusion, especially based off that fairly vague description. Again, like, play the exclusive Jabba's Gambit mission at launch. Does that mean all of the Jabba the Hutt content is gated off by the season pass? Is it just like a little side quest? So Ubisoft follows up the following day with the clarification saying that the Hutt cartel will be, quote, part of the experience for all players, regardless of which edition they buy. Quote, this Ubisoft spokesperson says, "To clarify, Jabba the Hutt and the Hutt cartel are one of the main syndicates in Star Wars Outlaws and will be part of the experience for everyone who purchases the game, regardless of edition. The Jabba's Gambit mission is an optional additional mission with the Hutt cartel along Kay and Nix's journey across the Outer Rim. This mission will be available to those who purchase the season pass or an edition of the game, which includes the season pass." The IGN writer, who is Wesley Yinpool, continues, though, "However, the scope of the Jabba's Gambit mission remains unclear, leaving those who do not buy the season pass unsure of what they're missing out on. Ubisoft has said in the past that players can work for or even betray Jabba as one of the heads of Star Wars Outlaws criminal factions." Caitlin, I was doing a bit of research leading up to this story about we don't see a lot of day one like premium content like this anymore. Usually it's like cosmetics. Very rarely is it DLC available like day one for you to buy separate from the base price. Is there something that comes to mind? Like another example?
Yeah. Oh, another example that's done that. I think there's a reason that they don't do that, is because if you release all this premium content at the same time as the base game, obviously, people are going to assume, oh, well, then I'm not getting the best playthrough experience by playing the base game. So either why is it worth buying the game in general, or you're getting people to shell out $100 for a game. And like, especially with like Jabba the Hutt, who is a criminal gangster, like one of the most powerful gangsters in the galaxy, I think he would find this too shady and would like frown upon those who came up with this. I don't know. It's just like, it's confusing. I understand having like a season pass is different than a battle pass. Obviously, like, I don't know, a few months into the game, you want to like release, I wouldn't even call it a season pass. I think season passes in single player games are kind of weird. Usually it's to keep people like engaged and you want them to keep coming back to a game. And it's like, is it a single player experience? I don't know. Regardless of that strategy, I think just releasing it day one is it's just not smart. You're getting people to ask too many questions, and then you have to release statements trying to clarify, like, yes, it's this. No, it's not that. Yes, you're still getting Jabba the Hutt content in game. We can't say how much because the game's not out yet. Like, instead of just launching the game with a base version and having maybe some premium stuff behind, like cosmetics or something, like Jedi Survivor did, for I think their deluxe version was just cosmetics, which is like the version I got. I was like, yeah, I'll put them in a silly little poncho. But yeah, I don't know. I don't like it. It seems weird, especially for like, yeah, one of the main characters in this game, a very beloved character in the franchise, locking even just like if it's one mission behind a paid version or behind, what do you, like a deluxe edition. I don't know. It just like seems weird to me, and it doesn't make me want to spend money for it. For even the game, I was looking forward to the game, and after this, I'm like, I'm going to have to wait to see like really what reviews say for the base game before I make my decision. But yeah, it left more of a sour taste in my mouth than a sweet one.
Yeah. The question I wrote down in the outline, like that I tried to articulate the catch 22 of this whole thing, is like, is it possible to have day one premium content that is both valuable and not upsetting to players? Because either, you know, by splintering this, what is the name of the Jabba's Gambit, I believe is the title of it. Yeah, by splintering the Jabba's Gambit mission off and putting it as part of the season pass, that communicates that, like, you know, people like Jabba, people want more Jabba content. Feel very weird saying Jabba over and over again. So by doing that, it shows that, like, okay, this is something we think people will pay more money for to play. But in order to not upset people that are already paying $70 to play the rest of the game, you have to then say like, oh, but it's not that good. Like, you know, it puts you in this situation where like you can't promise that it's like the Jabba crime syndicate mission that everybody is hoping for, because then everybody, like you mentioned, like it left the same sour taste in my mouth of like, oh, like I'm already paying $70 for this, you know, Star Wars open world kind of, like, you know. Frankly, this is the type of game you can listen to my personal podcast that I do with my brother. I've been pitching like a crime syndicate Star Wars games for years, something that doesn't really involve Jedi. This is totally up my alley. But knowing that they're siphoning off content and putting it elsewhere makes you wonder, either the mission itself is probably not that good, like based on past experiences with kind of like day one missions that aren't available in the rest of the game, probably isn't like that great compared to the rest of the game. Or if it is really good, it just pisses everybody off that they didn't get it as part of the $70 to begin with. So
also, if it's available day one, why is it just not in the game? Like, any content that is made up to launch, just put it in the game. If you have like really positive reception and you're working on bonus content, DLC for a year later, like that's a lot of development time that's been put into it, like additional resources and people. Like, if they liked the game, they're going to want to support it. Treat your consumers like adults. A majority of them are adults. Don't treat us like children. Like, trust that if you're making a game for your consumer base and it is a fun and good game, they're going to want to support you financially. If you then you can release that DLC and people will be like, oh my God, I had such a great time with Star Wars Outlaws last year. I can't wait to jump into more. Let me buy this DLC. And there's no problem putting it behind a paywall on day one. It just doesn't make any sense. I don't know. I don't know what else more there like really is to say, other than I just think it was a really bad move to announce it now. And I really don't understand the multiple editions that make it very confusing to understand what you're getting in a game. Like, in the early access, like 2 days early, like you and I already in this episode couldn't figure out what the release date was because it's supposed to be August 30th. But if you have this ultimate edition, I don't even know what edition it is, you get early access and it's 2 days early. Like, okay. I don't know.
No, I'm with you. I mean, if you talk to games media, I think we've talked about this with Dan Stapleton, I know, and I think we brought it up with Tom Marks as well, that at least when it comes to games media, the early access release date is the release date. So it sure, I guess, creates some sort of FOMO around people who, you know, are on the fence about whether they want to spend $110 to play it 3 days early. But I don't think that's certainly, I think there are better uses of people's money. And yeah, like you mentioned, I mean, I hate to like put it like a dirty little secret like this, but like even if this content was done and like you could, like they are, it is done or going to be done come launch, they're releasing it on day one. But like, why not just hold it as if it was something they were working on and then release it in October and November for season pass owners? And you know, there's going to be probably some sort of like Disney Plus Star Wars thing this fall. I know there's that Jude Law Skeleton Crew show in the works. Like, release it around that. Get another like bump of attention on this game while everybody has moved on to whatever comes out in September and October of this year. Like, I don't know. The reason we couldn't come up with any examples of like day one premium actual game content, not cosmetic, it's because I think this is like a dated practice. Like, you know, Call of Duty used to sell season passes alongside their games that had, and that wasn't even day one content. That was just like, you get the next four maps when, as they come out, and that you don't have to pay for them because you've already pre-purchased them. Right. All of this just feels like, a relic of a bygone day of, you know, game monetization.
What did Starfield launch with?
Starfield, so I remember that had an early launch period before the Labor Day weekend.
Skins. Oh, Sheltered Space Story expansion. So maybe this had... I should know. I'm pretty sure I had the premium edition. I can't remember. Regardless, it's like, this was also an original IP.
It's, yeah, I think all this goes to like, say, like,
go ahead.
It would have been a lot safer. Like, they created new original characters with Outlaws. Make that the day one premium content. Because if it's a character nobody has any attachment to, like, sure, it's still, you know, bonus content for people who fork up the money for the gold edition or the, you know, the ultimate edition. But at least it's not the character that's most likely going to be on the box art and everyone has an attachment to.
You know what Starfield did? You got the DLC. It was DLC, but it came later. It just was like, if you bought the premium edition, you get access to the DLC later on.
That makes sense.
I think that's,
you know,
yeah.
And again, it
which again, they could be like, how is that any different than you getting it day one? You know what? I wish I could have had a good answer for you, but my gut instinct is just, yeah.
I think from at least a perception, like there is this just like, if I'm going to be already spending $60 to $70 for a game on day one, I want everything that is ready for this game. That is a lot of money for anyone. And then by proxy, releasing your DLC later, whether they had done this for the Jabba's mission or for this Starfield DLC, it does create this perception, whether it's true or not, that update or that piece of content required more work, that it was crafted with care and that the developers wanted to spend time after the full version or like, you know, the base version of the game had released to spend more time and to expand on the experiences. And like you said, like treat the fans with more of the game they like. And I don't even, is that DLC for Starfield even out yet? Like, or is that the rumored one that's going to come with like the PlayStation port, that whole fiasco from a couple months ago?
Oh, let's see. I was expected sometime in 2024. Okay. Yeah. So we haven't got it yet. Yeah, and no new update. Still slated for this year. So maybe something next year, maybe something we'll see in the Xbox showcase, whatever that is.
That's a good shout.
But something else I looked up was like the Starfield Premium Edition is $100. I feel like that's a typical price for any premium ultimate edition, $20, $30 more than a base game. It had a bunch of cosmetics. You get DLC later on. Star Wars Outlaws is $130. There's no game that I think I would pay that for. Like The Last of Us 2, I spent a lot of money on because I bought the physical edition to get like the steel book and my Ellie stat. It was either my Ellie or Joel one. I can't remember which one came. I think it was Ellie that like came with it. Like, sure, I spent $200 on something, but like I got like physical goods with it. And then I bought the digital version so I could have it play it at midnight. So like there are some games I'd spend a lot on, but just like a digital game with just like access to some 2 days early and a DLC day one, $130 is outrageous. Especially like in today's climate of how much things cost and like people don't have that much expendable income anymore.
Yeah, to clarify, I see. So the gold edition includes, that's the $110 version that has a pre-order offer of the Kessel Runner bonus pack, cosmetics, two story pack DLCs, plus the Jabba's Gambit mission, which is exclusive day one. So I guess the story pack DLCs are probably meatier expansions more than just a single mission. But regardless, and then the Ultimate Edition, which is $20 more than that, $130, adds a digital art book as well as more cosmetics.
It's confusing.
Doesn't change your point. And I was researching like, okay, let's look at the game of the year, the games of the year for the last couple of years. Like both God of War Ragnarok and Elden Ring, their Ultimate Editions came with, you know, like you said, with your Last of Us Part 2 example, like physical goods. I think that is oftentimes just a good thing to point to as saying that's worth the money. It shows that you're, you know, if you're buying the gold or ultimate edition anyway, you're probably the hardest of hardcore fan of whatever that thing is. And that is the, you know, the Venn diagram is a circle there for people interested in like a physical product or good related to that thing. So yeah, I appreciate the Last of Us Part 2 example.
Yeah. It's, I don't know, physical goods are nice to have, and especially with like something that you love a lot. I don't know how well that would do with Star Wars Outlaws, like even though it's a Star Wars IP, it's new characters, it's sort of a new setting. I mean, familiar locations and everything, but the story is original. We don't know what the story is going to be, what the game's, how it's going to play out. But I could have seen like a really cool steelbook or something. Doesn't even have to have the physical disc, though a lot of people want that, and more power to them. I am with you on the preservation of physical goods, but yeah, I don't know, just the base edition and gold edition and ultimate or digital plus and ultimate, or it's just, it's too many, and I think what they're asking is too much.
Yeah, well, like you said, definitely threw like a wet blanket on an otherwise pretty cool looking story trailer. Again, a pitch of a game that I've always kind of been looking forward to. So I'm still hopeful. Ubisoft's next showcase is June 10th. So I think in retrospect, they probably wish they would have held this news until then or even July, instead of like dampening their release date announcement. But hey, hopefully they can use the Ubisoft Forward showcase to make a case for why everything in the base game is totally worth it.
Yeah, but I'm sure when the time comes, one of us will probably have bought it. We'll see. We'll talk about if it was worth the investment later this year.
That sounds good.
Someone send me a code, please, because I don't want to buy it.
That too. You mentioned Starfield earlier. Let's switch over to our last topic of the week, which is Bethesda's Fallout, or more specifically, in this case, Prime Video's fallout. Where do you think I was like, going?
I have no idea, but I totally forgot what our last topic was. And I was like, are we talking about Starfield?
No, at least for now, there is no Starfield TV show in the works, but never count it out. We go to Joe Otterson at Variety, who writes, Fallout has been renewed for season 2 at Amazon Prime Video. The announcement comes after Variety reported that a second season was set to receive a $25 million tax credit by relocating shooting to the state of California. Geneva Robertson-Dorett and Graham Wagner are the creators, executive producers, and showrunners. Jonathan Nolan and Lisa Joy are the executive producers through Kilter Films, and which has an overall deal with Amazon. All of these aforementioned folks will be returning for season 2. In a statement, Nolan and Joy said, praise be to our insanely brilliant showrunners, to our kick-ass cast, to Todd and James, and all the legends at Bethesda, and to the amazing team at Amazon for their incredible support of the show. We can't wait to blow up the world all over again. Amazon, in its announcement for season 2, said that Fallout is one of their three top most watched shows ever on Prime Video history and the most watched season of TV since The Lord of the Rings, Rings of Power. So topping, I think, I mean, I remember Gen V was last year. I know Invincible season 2 was aired since now and then. I mean, you put this up with Lord of the Rings and maybe The Boys, like those, that's good company, at least. The Boys. I admittedly have not watched Lord of the Rings, Rings of Power. But this show's, I mean, as we talked about last week, bona fide hit. Caitlin, since last episode, you have finished the season. What is your reaction to the season 2 announcement?
Oh, I'm so excited. As soon as I got to the very last episode and like the last shot, I was like, oh, they knew all along. Like there was going to be a season 2. It sets up season 2 exactly what I wanted. I'm not going to get into spoilers because I know a lot of people still haven't seen it, but like you need to go watch this show. It fires on all cylinders. Every single episode, there was not one episode where I was like, oh my God, I'm bored. I may have just cut out for a second. I apologize if so, but there was not a single second where I wasn't bored while watching this show. And I really just, I can't wait to see what is next for the ghoul, Lucy, Maximus. I hope in season 2, they spend a little bit more time on Maximus's character. That was the only thing that I felt was lacking a bit this season. I think everything else was handled really well. I said this last week, just want a little bit more backstory and for Maximus's character to be fleshed out a bit more. But I'm really excited about where we're headed. And for anybody who's finished, you know where we're headed. Or if you know the Fallout lore, you could probably guess. And I'm excited.
Nice. Yeah, I have finished another episode since our last recording. So I'm halfway through the season, finished episode 4 last night. And yeah, I continue to be impressed, especially I was a little worried. They talked about this on one of Caitlin and I's favorite TV podcasts, The Watch, this increasing trend of having a filmmaker or a really established voice in whether TV or movies direct the first couple episodes of a show and then hand it over to other directors. And sometimes shows start to stumble when that handoff happens. But episode 4 and then onward are the episodes not directed by Jonathan Nolan. And I thought episode 4 totally held the tone mm-hmm. and pacing and general level of production value as the first three episodes. If this is not a knock against the first three episodes at all, but like, if anything, I'm just more in on the show. Episode 4, not getting too deep into spoilers, you start to unravel more about the shared vaults between our main characters. We get a bit more like fleshing out of whatever. Norms. I didn't want to say Rico from Hannah Montana. what kind of like Norm's mystery is going to be this season. We also got some mm-hmm. good character development between the ghoul and Lucy. This is the episode called The Ghouls for those who have seen it. So yeah, I'm just like excited for this crew to continue making this show together. I'm glad that it sets up season 2 well. Caitlin, other than the Maximus Brotherhood of Steel stuff, hoping to get, you know, more stuff there in season 2, without delving too deep into spoilers, are there any other big like hopes or, you know, drawbacks of the show you hope they can improve next time around?
That is a very good question. I can't wait to see. Oh, it's hard to like talk about it without spoiling anything. I can't wait to see what they do with the ghouls character. As you mentioned, starting like after the first few episodes, you get a little bit more backstory into Cooper. That's his name, his life pre-ghoulification. And I really think like this isn't confirmed or not spoiling anything. I just think like Lucy may be that catalyst that kind of brings the humanity back to him. I mm-hmm. hope that's what's happening. I really love their dynamic. I think it's episode 4 that you're talking about. I think that's a pretty heavy Lucy Ghoul episode.
Very. She gets the vials yes. for him at the end.
Yes. Okay. Loved that episode. And yeah, after that specific episode, I was like, I need so much more of them. So I can't wait till you get to the very end of this season. We'll have to talk about it. But it has me excited for the next season. And yeah, I can't talk about anything else without spoiling anything. So I'm looking forward to them. I'm looking forward to Norm's character as well. I think I mentioned this last week. He has my favorite like character arc in season 1. And where he ends is really interesting. So I can't wait to learn more about what is going on there. Yeah, I think those are my 3 things. So Maximus, Norm, and then the Lucy,
more
Cooper,
Lucy and Ghoul.
Yeah, more Lucy and Ghoul. I'm a freak. I love it.
Well, with a show like this, frankly, with any big budget show nowadays, we're probably looking at, this feels so weird to say out loud, like a 2026 release probably at the earliest. Of course, like it was a 2-year gap. The strikes happened, so maybe this won't always be the case. But, you know, House of the Dragon took 2 years between that season and this new season coming out in June. That show, to my understanding, really wasn't affected by the strikes. Last of Us season 2 was, and that's certainly not coming out until next year. So all this goes to say, we're going to have a while between now and Fallout season 2. So Caitlin, if you're Microsoft and Bethesda, of course, as we talked about on last week's show, this takes place in its own setting, its own set of characters, separate from so much of what we understand about Fallout to this point. But without getting into spoilers, as you kind of hinted at, I know where season 2 is heading. If you're Microsoft and Bethesda, like, are you going to try to, what do you do between now and season 2? Is there anything we can do with this huge resurgence of the Fallout brand to keep the fire kindled?
Good question. First thing I'll note is I wouldn't be surprised if we don't have to wait a full 2 years, just because I think it was probably already greenlit internally by Amazon for season 2. Now that they have the tax credits from California, shooting on location, that shortens the post-production time with the special effects teams. They can get crews together easier. I mean, we saw like how quickly like season 3 of The Bear turned out. Like that's still going to come out this summer. I know Fallout is way more sets and a lot more has to go into that show, but I wouldn't be surprised if we see something like Q4 of next year instead of like a full 2 years. So with that said, what Bethesda can do, you know, like I really wish we would get Fallout 5. I would love if they could announce that, but I don't think we're getting that anytime soon. They're currently working on Elder Scrolls
6. Yeah.
6. Do we know anything about that, of like when the target launch for that is? I've never played an Elder Scrolls game, so I have no idea what.
Yeah, I mean, the gap between Fallout 4 and Starfield was 2015 to 23, so that was 8 years. I mean, I certainly hope we're not waiting until 2031 for Elder Scrolls 6. In some ways, it's, you know, they have the playbook. They've made, you know, Morrowind, Oblivion, Skyrim. You won't have to hope. I mean, I don't know what the scope of this thing is, but imagine it's not as necessarily ambitious and procedurally generated oriented as Starfield is. Hopefully they can turn it around, you know, by 2028. I know.
Yeah, not 15 years from now.
Yeah. But I mean, all this goes to say, even if they fast track this thing and it's 2027, like Fallout 5 is not coming out until, in all realism, the early 2030s, which is, again, so weird to say out loud. And so I'm with you that, like, whether it's a Fallout 3 remake slash like very heavy duty remaster, or winking wink, same thing for Fallout New Vegas, like, I think it would be, you know, if games are going to continue taking as long as they are, that's why we're seeing so many remakes happen, because there is a certain degree of like franchise and brand management that needs to happen to keep these things relevant and in check, and remind, keep people reminded why they're looking forward to the next entry of something. So yeah. I certainly, especially given all of the love for Fallout, would be excited for remakes or remasters of those games, because I haven't played them myself, and I know fans would be as well. So I think there's two good audiences there. Or maybe just do a big Fallout Shelter event. I don't know.
Maybe. Maybe I need to get back into like Fallout 76. Probably not. Maybe I'll just stick with Fallout Shelter. I wanted to say another option is, so we know like Fallout New Vegas was developed by Obsidian. Potentially Obsidian and Bethesda are now both owned by Microsoft. Like, there's something there. However, we know Obsidian is working on Avowed and The Outer Worlds too. And I don't want either of those. Like, we know Avowed's coming out soon. I loved The Outer Worlds. I can't wait for the second game. I don't want that to get shelved at the sake of like them reigniting the Fallout game franchise. So like, it's hard to even be like, oh, just like lease the rights over to Obsidian and let them make another game, because they're also busy. I don't really know what the right answer is. I think it's just not looking good for Fallout fans unless somebody else out there, some other studio. Embracer, you've got how many? I'm just kidding. Don't. She'll never see the light of day. But I don't know. It's, oh, sorry. I think I'm experiencing an earthquake. Just a minor one, maybe. I was like, wait, what, I'm shaking.
Wild thing to capture live.
Well, my camera didn't shake, so it obviously wasn't that intense.
That's just the tremors from drinking your ghost energy drink.
Yeah, I'm actually just like in the zone right now. I realize people who are listening didn't see me just like start to jam out. I'm actually back in Coachella.
I like the Obsidian idea. I know that has been like a Fallout fan pitch ever since all of these companies went under the same umbrella. Another thing that would be interesting, I don't know how hungry people are for this exact type of game, but I think clearly based on the success of this show, now is the best time than ever, is that Fallout started as a strategy oriented game, an isometric, more turn-based kind of joint that was made by the team that eventually would form Obsidian. So even whether it's not Obsidian, like they own In Exile, they've also worked with, you know, they published Age of Wonders 4 and they did Gears Tactics and Halo Wars 1 and 2. Like, it would be interesting, even if, again, like you said, it's Microsoft partnering with a studio they don't own, you know, completely unrelated, but they're partnering with Toys for Bob, a former Activision studio, for what seemingly looks like to be a Spyro game. It'd be cool if they find like the best talent to make a Fallout Tactics game. Like, if that game is ever going to succeed, now's probably the best time to do it.
Yeah. yeah, I now is the time. It's such a shame that the Fallout show didn't like come out with this like huge resurgence for Fallout and like a bunch of announcements for Fallout games. And I don't know. I think there's so much they could do with the Fallout franchise. But
yeah, ultimately it's still done well for the brands. Like reading from GamesIndustry.biz that Fallout Shelter's daily revenue had rocketed to $80,000 after the TV show debuted on April 10th. It was at $20,000 for daily revenue. 3 days later, April 13th, it was at $80,000 for daily revenue. Going to Kevin Purdy at Ars Technica, Fallout 76 had hovered around 7,000 to 10,000 concurrent players through most of 2024. Following the weekend of the show's release, it quadrupled that to 43,000. Similarly, SteamDB just averaged all of the concurrent player numbers for 76, 4, and New Vegas, and it had more than doubled from, you know, the weekend before to the weekend after Fallout's launch. So I think this goes to show like why PlayStation released The Last of Us Part 1 a couple months before the HBO show release, because they knew that people were going to be hungry for it when it came showtime. So, you know, I hope all other transmedia properties take note as well.
Yeah. But we also know like sometimes stars don't align and production schedules aren't open. And I'm sure at one point they probably discussed it. We're like, is there something we can do? And Bethesda's probably just like, no. they got to keep working on Elder Scrolls 6. I mean, Skyrim is one of the most profitable games ever. It's been on every single console since I was like 10 years old or something, maybe older. I don't know when Skyrim came out. I don't know how old I am. No one needs to know this, but yeah, I'm sure there is no world in which they shelve Elder Scrolls 6 to start working on a Fallout game. So
no, and ultimately
their next bet is Obsidian, and they're also busy.
Yeah, they're making their own kind of Fallout game with the Outer Worlds too.
Yeah.
And like you said, by no means am I advocating for a return to like the movie show game tie-in. If it works out, it works out, and it's very fortuitous. And hell, like we're getting the next gen update for Fallout 4 the day after this episode comes out. So that in its own way will add, you know, I'm sure boost sales for Fallout 4 more than it already has. The show already has. So
yeah, and I'm sure the show has brought in a lot of new fans for people who have probably never played a Fallout game. I know I don't think I ever finished Fallout 4, to be honest. I know I played it when it came out and I liked it. I don't know if I finished it. So I'm excited to like go back. I think I don't remember a whole lot. So to me, it's going to kind of be like a whole new experience in itself. So I'm excited.
Yeah. I am as well. And with that, those were our three news stories for this week. And that is our episode. Caitlin, thank you so much for braving through the post Coachella fatigue and talking about Embracer Star Wars and Fallout with me. Always a pleasure.
Of course. Always happy to be here with you.
You can find Caitlin everywhere at Caitlin Redwing. You can find me everywhere at Sam Scott Mosier. Follow the show on Twitter, YouTube, TikTok at Realtime Strats, Dyname Instagram as well. You can email us questions at podcast@triplepointpr.com. And until next week, thank you all so much for listening.
Bye.